RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Overcast Val
and Bean.
Yes, my kind of day. Let's get some work done.
Look, there is, I'm watching very carefully and very closely, Hurricane Dorian. Now, the last track that I saw this thing take, which it's way too far out for them to really know, it's hitting Florida, and then it's looping up through the Carolinas, and then it's hitting Long Island. That's the last thing I saw. If you go to Tropical Tidbits, which is a great website, which gives you like all the models you can look at, It shows like different tracks that it could be taking. Like if you go to forecast models and then you scroll through, it tells you a little tutorial on how to use the thing. And then you can kind of scroll through the days and see what the deal is. And it appears as though they're unsure of where this thing is actually going to hit. Like the GFS has it hitting on the border of Georgia and South Carolina and then moving up through the coast and then going out to sea and then kind of hitting the island. I don't know. It's just I hate hurricanes and I hate dealing with it and I hate the craziness that happens before and then, you know, the weather people evacuating people and not knowing, you know, being overcompensating and it's just
a you know who loves hurricane season? Liberals.
Oh, yeah.
Too bad hurricane season does actually I guess hurricane season does show up just in time for elections. It ends around election time, right? Except like around September to November?
Yeah. There are other models that have it hitting like Central Florida, looping around to the other coast and then going up. It's very weird. You know, I follow weather a lot. And
well, you're a Carolina girl. You have to.
Yeah.
Me, it's just whatever.
I know. You're up there in the Pantaleo world.
You know, here's the thing. When you want to talk about this gets into a whole other conversation there, too. When you want to talk about FEMA and you want to talk about government insured and backed disaster relief and all that, you can make the case that it is a scheme in itself to put all of this money, tens of billions of dollars, and maybe over the course of years, trillions of dollars, into protecting these high risk areas of the country that are going to normally get pounded by seasonal weather like this. Whereas maybe if there was no safety net there, people would be a little bit less inclined to develop such high valued places and resorts and develop.
That's
been brought up there before too, where it almost takes away the almost like a Darwin-esque kind of scenario from low-lying coastal areas and all that other stuff. So something to consider.
You know what's crazy is I did a video a long time ago. I'm going to try and find it right now where I forget what hurricane it was right before. People were saying, oh, you know, the government doesn't mess with the weather and all that stuff. And I said, hold on a second, people. And I went into the reading room and I pulled all of the FOIA'd stuff about cloud seeding and weather manipulation from the reading room. And I did a video on it. Because I said, you guys can't, you know, you can't say that they don't do this when here they are in their own words, in their own documents, talking about the fact that they do it. So there's that.
If you go to weathermodificationhistory.com, it's the most comprehensive weather modification and geoengineering timeline out there. Starts from the 19th century. Okay, that's when we started realizing how you can actually make it rain in some parts of the country by lighting fires in other parts of the country. We already know when it was really starting to be weaponized in the 60s. Not only were we flooding the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Vietnam and extending monsoon season, but we were actually seeding clouds outside of Cuba to take water away from Castro to kill all of his sugar crops.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff happens. This isn't
Yeah, so we know how to build it up. We know how to build up storm systems out of nowhere, that's for sure. And we also know how to at least downgrade them, which is why when these hurricanes come around, President Trump got lambasted for allegedly saying something about nuking a hurricane. Well, you know, that was studied at one point there, too, whether or not bombing a hurricane would disperse it. That's not his idea.
No, but it is, though, Frank. Didn't you know? It is.
Everything's his idea.
Everything. Even only the crazy stuff, though. Not the real stuff he has ideas about. Speaking of which, let's actually move into the first topic I wanted to talk about today. And I don't know if you'd had a chance to watch it yet, but I took the time to watch it, given the hysteria surrounding it. Dave Chappelle's new comedy special.
No, I'll be watching it today, I think, at some point.
Now, I was a huge Dave Chappelle fan from way back in the day. Watched every season of Chappelle's Show at least a few times. The man is a comedic genius. Two of the sketches that come to mind are Clayton Bigsby, the black white supremacist, which I just thought was brilliant for so many reasons. Have you ever seen that one?
Of course.
Of course.
We were in high school when that came out. It changed everything.
Yeah. I mean, it was just the thought of, like, just shattering the belief about skin color to the point, you know what I mean? Like, just, it's so deep. It was just fantastic. And then there was another one that I loved that I really can't say. It was in the style of a 60s sitcom, and it involved a white family that had a racial slur as their last name.
Yeah. And with the black mailman, right?
With the black mailman who did nothing but stereotype the family based off of, it was just hysterical.
I did a little bit of this. I did bring up Dave Chappelle a little bit in this. But last week, I put a little bit of attention, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I did a show called When Stereotypes Attack. And the last thing I brought up was Sarah Silverman. Because I don't know if you heard this, Tracy, but she got removed from a project. She got removed from a script the day before her scenes were due in. Because someone dug up that bit of hers from Comedy Central back in the day where she ends up in blackface.
Yes.
And she was very concerned. She was really bummed about losing the job. She thought it was a sweet gig. Had nothing against the person who replaced her. I made a highlight out of this in particular. It's called Sarah Silverman Gets Canceled. And what did she say? I got to be honest. I'm liberal. I'm for all, you know, I didn't expect. They don't understand what we lost. They don't understand that they were a part of the reason why we lost the things that we did. And Dave Chappelle exemplified the places we used to be able to go to make humor out of some of the most sensitive things. And here we are sitting back, and we're actually living out the parody that we used to run to for humor. And it's been turned into a political platform. And that's why it's so hard to get people to laugh anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, Will and I, my husband and I, Mr. Beans, nobody knows his first name, and now they do. We are huge stand-up comedy fans. Huge. We go to shows. We love it. It's something that we do together. We laugh our butts off, or we used to laugh our butts off. At some of, like, the more vulgar and nasty comics out there, they make us laugh. It's funny. It's just the more outrageous, the funnier I think it is. I just don't know what it is. I just have that kind of sense of humor. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. That's hysterical. And we have come to the realization over the past couple of years that we really can't watch stand-up comedians anymore, because you'll get about a quarter of the way into their set and then they'll launch into their tirade politically. And it's not funny anymore because they're malicious when they do it for the most part. And the ones that are able to finish a set and don't directly attack either side are the ones I find most enjoyable. Because there's a gazillion things that you can talk about in today's day and age that are not political that still can make people laugh. The problem is that the left takes everything and makes it political. So there's a subsection of comedians out there who have just decided they're not going to do sets anymore because they can't make jokes without being attacked. And Dave Chappelle just said, damn you all to hell, I'm going out there and I'm going to piss off everybody. And he did. And it was funny.
Yeah, well, the first thing that the comedians started doing was they stopped playing colleges.
Yes.
That universities is the first place that they stopped going to. And now I guess it's like, since everything is really the best gig you can get at this point is a Netflix special, got to really start taking inventory on things. And what I said the other night on my show this week, Monday night, is number one rule of thumb for everybody out there is whatever the left does not like, you have to go watch.
Yeah.
You have to pick it up. You have to read it because it's probably good. Yeah. Okay. It's a very, very simple thing. And it's because they're busybody ninnies. That's just what it is. And if there's anything that is of substance, anything that is going to speak to the human condition in an honest way, whether it be happy, sad, conflicted in some way, whatever it is, you got to go watch it. So I would say the reason why you have to go watch Chappelle is the same reason why you have to go watch Green Book, and anything else that they say did not hit the mark or is offensive in some way.
Well, this was great because he skirted it so cleanly. Like, he went after both perspectives in a way that each person on whatever side of the aisle you're on got an elbow. And it was fine by me. I thought it was hysterical. He went after he kind of towed the line on the abortion stuff. But he more was just real. And it was brilliant. It really was. Was it the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life? No. But I'm really sick and tired of seeing these comedians where it's supposed to be a comedy set and it turns into some one-man poetry show about all the bad things in the world. Like, it's happened to me on several occasions, Frank, where I've put on a special and it turns into this comedian telling us, like, John Leguizamo, what happened to you?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
It's going to be very hard for me to watch the Ace Ventura films again.
It sucks. It really does. But Dave Chappelle, hopefully, broke the ice for the Louis C.K.'s and the others of the world to come back. I'm going to hold on one sec, Frank. Okay, sorry about that.
Yep.
There he is in the background, the crazy rocket ship that is my...
Taking set. Off. Strap in.
All right, so let's move on from stand-up comedy, shall we?
Sure, whatever you want to do, Tracy Beans.
Let's go to this USA Today poll that just came out.
Uh-oh.
Susan Page, who I don't know who she is, to be quite honest with you. Oh, USA Today DC Bureau Chief.
She should be taken seriously, whoever she is.
She's a Bureau Chief, Frank.
So sit back and get learned.
Give her your full authority.
Here we go.
They put up, I hate this. It's really annoying. I'm trying to get to this link. It doesn't like that I've decided to use Adblock. And now I'm stuck in a perpetual loop of trying to view this
article. It's 1997 again with the pop-ups.
I mean,
That's another Dave Chappelle sketch. You remember that? If the internet were a place, you remember that sketch?
Yes. Yes. Freaking amazing. Oh,
if the internet were an actual place, and well, pop-ups were part of it there too, but definitely go check those out.
I can't.
Oh. We should never, I'm sorry to bring this back up, but we should never, ever forget this. And it's so hard to find clips of it because nobody has put together a box set. And it was probably one of the greatest things outside of the Chappelle Show to be on television for as long as it was on. But that is Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn.
Oh, that was good. Colin Quinn is good.
That was awesome for comedy. Because that's where I really started learning about who, like, Patrice O'Neill was. And Kevin Hart was on there early. You had a lot of people on there. It was amazing. If you can find any clips of Tough Crowd on YouTube, watch them. They're amazing. They got to put out a box set.
Yeah, they should really do that. But you know what happened there. That's too crazy too. Can't have that.
Yeah. All right.
So here we are. USA Today Suffolk poll. Americans dread the 2020 election. Americans are facing the 2020 presidential election with a dominant feeling. Dread. A nationwide USA Today Suffolk University poll found a sharply divided country, surprise, that views next year's presidential campaign as a sobering test of the fundamental values of the United States. A majority of those on both sides called the election the most important of their lifetimes. And after it's over, if the candidate they support loses, nearly 4 in 10 said they would have little or no confidence that the election had been conducted in a fair and square way, setting up what could be a debate over the legitimacy of a next president. Those expressing doubts crossed partisan lines, 30% of Republicans and 45% of Democrats, although they identified different threats to the electoral process. In the crowded Democrat contest, former Vice President Joe Biden retained a wide lead at 32%, up 2 percentage points, but Warren moved up 4 points to second place at 14, and Sanders dropped 3 points.
Well, that's because Matt Drudge has been trying to help Warren in any way he can.
As a matter of, before we move on to what the next statement is here, do me a favor. You got a browser open. Go to a browser.
Got it.
Type in MAGAPILL .co.
C-O.
And okay, hit enter.
Oh, Elizabeth Warren. What have you done, Elizabeth?
Just came across this on Twitter. Before you type out magapill.com, which is the website that documents Donald Trump's achievements, if you accidentally forget the M and you hit enter, they've hijacked the domain name to redirect to elizabethwarren.com.
Which will be great because her achievements is lying about her heritage.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, moving on. The sense of towering stakes has been stoked by President Donald Trump.
Oh, no.
Whose sweeping policies and provocative rhetoric has convinced some that he's protecting basic American precepts and others that he's undermining them. So it's all Donald Trump's fault, no matter what thing you think.
Yep.
It's Donald Trump's fault that you think it. If the election were held today, 41% say they would vote for an unnamed Democrat nominee, which means that nobody likes anybody on the Democrat side. 39% for Trump. 10% they would vote for a third party candidate, and another 10 were undecided. Sometimes when you stand up and fight, it's not easy, said Cynthia Lasser, 81, a Republican from Marrero, Louisiana. I back him because I feel like he's doing the right thing. They have another John Fortman, 57, an independent, says he's a tyrant or would be if he could get away with it.
Yes, yes. He's a tyrant or would be if he can get away with it. So obviously, Mr. whatever the hell his name is, has not been paying attention to what the FBI and the Department of Justice was doing for the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Because they thought they were going to be able to get away with it.
Yeah. Asked to give one word that described how they were feeling about next year's contest, four of the top five responses conveyed alarm and angst, with voters using words such as frightened, train wreck, nervous, and chaotic.
That's America for you. Bunch of frightened, scared, confused people now. Mm. Or at least that's what's being projected. Everybody's very frightened, confused. And let me just say, let's say that this is authentic. Let's say that this is really authentic, even though I don't care about any poll you put on out there. I don't care. But the one thing I will say about this is, if this doesn't make you reconsider what the hell our government has become, where every 4 years when there's an election for president, everybody is holding their breath. It's not supposed to be like this. It was never supposed to be like this.
People scared. Yeah.
The presidency is supposed to be just slightly more capable of the vice presidency. Okay. There's checking powers there. They have their own abilities that kind of level out the other two branches and whatnot. But this is supposed to be so inconsequential that, yeah, one way or another, it can drive policy. They're going to be a chief diplomat on the world stage, representing the country in world affairs. But this was supposed to be something where the federal government, in their limited responsibilities, were going to be able to conduct their own affairs in the limited scope that was charted for them. While everybody else, I mean, we should be more concerned about what our governors, our gubernatorial races should be like at home, what our state house and senates are looking like in our home states. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So maybe if you feel that anxiety, you feel it on a year that we don't over here in New York. You know, it's not the entire country is gripped with fear. So just that this is the way that we are living now should really, I mean, everybody should want to make this not be so. But the problem is that whereas there are people out there that want to break that down, the real fear is coming from people who want to have control over all 50 states and just fear that somebody aside from them is going to have the power. That's
yeah,
just
who
really
may
it
not
is.
Want it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, undoing what should never have been done in the first place is a big problem for these folks. Because then when they do it again, after having people experience what it's like to not have it done, it's going to be very bad on their part. And I want to say something to people. I want everyone to understand, and I think you guys all do, there is not going to be a conservative president in the White House forever. And if we're at the level of extremism that we're at right now and Donald Trump is reelected, I shudder to think what 2024 is going to look like.
This is why I said, I don't care what you find deplorable or what you find unappetizing about Donald Trump as a person. You got to vote for him in 2020 just for the reason that he is going to continue to appoint judges and those judges are going to buy us time.
Yeah. Those judges, Supreme Court.
Those judges are going to buy us time. Okay. Because we got to change the culture on the ground level to ever produce viable and bold candidates again.
Yeah. There was a sketch I came across on YouTube, not a sketch, like part of a hearing, where it was like this guy who was a term limits advocate who like excoriated them in committee hearing about term limits. And it was brilliant. It was 5 minutes long, and I seriously pondered playing the entire thing on the show because it was that much goodness in one little clip. And I don't see the harm in term limits. I think that there should be like this, you know, Kamala Harris just had a tweet about her career as a congressperson or whatever, or as a senator. And Gigi, my friend Gigi, said, you're not supposed to have a career in public service. That wasn't supposed to be the way it was.
First of all, that's oxymoronic. a career in public service.
Yeah, it is. You're right. She said, I'm going to find God. It. Oh, here it is. Gigi, your tweet is being highlighted. Thank you very much. Gigi works with me on Uncover DC. Kamala Harris says, I started my, it's a, you know what? Let me just play this clip. Let's do that. It'll be easier. It'll be easier for us, Frank. Bear with whatever. Me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Are you mad? Don't be mad.
No, no, whatever makes it easier.
I know you sound thrilled about this. It's really exciting.
No, I can't wait to hear Kamala Harris's voice.
Here we go. I started my career. Here we go. That wasn't her. That was me.
Store. And then I take my iron and my posters and I drive over to the local grocery store. And then I take my ironing board and my duct tape and my posters out of my car. And I go to the front of the grocery store and I'd open up my ironing board because you see an ironing board makes a great standing desk. And with my duct tape, I would tape my posters so that people could see them as they walked by. And then I would require people to talk to me as they walked in and out of the grocery store.
She's one of those annoying people that stalk you outside of grocery stores.
Yeah, I wonder if she was handing out free samples of pigs in a blanket. Somebody talk to me. Here's a pig in a blanket.
It makes shopping unbearable to be encountered by those people. I like the people that sit there, let you read their crap, and if you're interested, you talk to them. Anyway, let's keep going.
Do what we do. That's how we do what we do.
Oh, God.
It's about whatever it takes. Grassroots, pulling together the duct tape, pulling it together any way we need to. To get the job done of making sure that we are reaching out and touching people. We are listening to them. We are organizing for them, with them, and we are fighting every step of the way.
Now, she says when she tweets this, I started my career campaigning with an ironing board in front of grocery stores, talking to one voter at a time. Well, the first thing I think before we read Gigi's response is, what happens now? You don't do that anymore? You don't talk to one voter at a time anymore? It's not that important anymore?
No, now she's pulling bingo balls.
She's pulling some kind of balls out of a... It's not supposed to be called a career, says Gigi. You're a stateswoman here to serve the people. How far we've fallen from what the founders envisioned. In fact, it wasn't supposed to be a full-time job. DC made serving a district into a lottery win. Sad. She's ratioed up the wazoo, by the way. 3,000 responses, 945 retweets. Just the ratios on these things, it should tell you what. Did you see what happened to Cory Booker when he started talking about how you commented on it when Cory Booker said that when people hear fireworks in New Jersey, they think it's gunshots?
Yeah, whose problem's that?
Yeah.
Whose problem's that? Is that the gun? Is that? Oh, because, you know, like I said before, I've said it many times at this point. These people try to paint guns as if they are the dancing brooms from Fantasia, that they have a mind of their own. It has nothing to do with the people using the guns. And if that's the case, where everybody thinks, oh my God, fireworks are gunshots, then I would actually suggest that more people out there go out there, own firearms legally, train with them, and keep them on you. Because if that's the world that you're living in right there, the last thing you should do is be completely defenseless. All right? If this is the culture that you're going to make taxpayers live inside of, then they should at least be able to defend themselves from the crazies that your culture is producing.
He says, in my community, kids fear fireworks on the 4th of July because they sound like gunshots.
It's bullshit. First of all, they don't. They like fireworks.
I know. I agree with you.
They don't fear them.
3.2 thousand comments, 233 retweets.
Great engagement.
Yeah. And a lot of people, he was saying on another tweet about gun IDs for gun, you know, gun law and having, you know what I mean? Like the mandatory background checks and IDs to get a gun, not realizing that he's like undermining his own argument about why voter ID laws are important.
Yeah, yeah.
Trending right now on Twitter, Frank, is the hashtag Russian cosigners.
What does that mean?
Because USA Today came out and said that there is a representative from Deutsche Bank who is stating, Lawrence O'Donnell reported that Deutsche Bank representatives told him that Russian oligarchs co-signed on Trump's loans. And now Mike Del Moro came out and said that the information came from a single source who's not seen the bank records, and NBC has not seen the records and has not even been able to verify the reporting. Donald Trump comes out and says, I've never had a loan in Russia. This is bull. But Russian co-signers is trending with Trump tax returns.
Yeah, you know, I think there is a book. There was a book that I was brought to my attention. It's called The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen, from 1913, 2006, died in 2006. Former FBI official, published in 1958. And it is all about this book that was printed in 1958 and how all of the communist goals in the United States that were obviously planted here by the Russians. And it was all about these Soviet fellow travelers who were infecting the arts and education and media and government itself and public perception of civics and all that stuff. And here we are today with people who at the same time were being raised by this Russian Soviet propaganda, whereas to now today, Russia is completely cleaned, almost cleaned out of this ideology. They may be other things. They may still have authoritarian problems in their government. Every government has their problems. But as far as this legacy of communism, it's so amazing how the people today who are the direct result of this infiltration that for many decades were part of the group that would deny that there was ever any communist infiltration, especially in the arts and any of that stuff. It was a witch hunt. Joe McCarthy. And now here they are. There's Russians everywhere. And they just don't get it.
But there aren't Russians everywhere now. It's like almost like, I see what you're saying. Like they're living out the opposite. Like, oh, goodness, it couldn't get any worse.
That's what you say. When you want to take over a country and bring it down without firing a shot, you have to be able to invert reality for the people living inside the country and completely demoralize them, confuse them, make them frustrated, and give them something small and something shallow to sink their teeth into, like class warfare, gender, obsessive seeking of orgasm. This is exactly this is where we are right now. And to think that these people are becoming anti-Russian detectives now are hilarious. It is hilarious in its ignorance.
It's hilarious also to watch these same people who are subscribing to this theory, even though they know it's not true, run around yelling now that they're being held to account for it. And this is a little off topic, but what we talked about the other day about how the New York Times journalists are upset that people are poking through their past tweets to find, you know, insensitive things that they've said in the past after what they've done to everyday citizens in this country in terms of doxing and everything else. It's sick. They've become a weapon of the propaganda, you know, I hate using the words deep state, but evil, evil sect of our government that comes after its own citizens.
Well, as I always said, we are the deep state.
Yeah.
We the people are the deep state. This is a culture that not only produces those who think that it is virtuous to wield this kind of power in a very political and pointed kind of way, but we rationalize it all away. We cheer it on in some respects. This is bread and circus. This is, you know, Circus Maximus. This is Rome, you know?
That's why fighting fire with the same fire is maybe the only thing that'll work. You know, glaring hypocrisy that we can point out on their side might actually just work for once. They're so scared of it, Frank. that they had to come out in front of it. Will it work? Yeah. Will it work to end this nonsense?
I don't know.
You know, I said things 10 years ago when my political ideology was a little bit different that I don't believe today. Should that be held against me forever? Or like, what about anybody that walked away then? Are they to be, excommunicated and scorned? If people, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not, if you say something disgusting, like, okay, I know that you were on the camp of the pedo people who said all that horrible stuff, like James Gunn, not going after them. I know you were in that camp, but that's not the same thing, in my opinion, as, you know, saying something funny about Jews, because it's kids and these jokes weren't funny. They were disgusting and there's history there. But I really don't think, like, if we were living in a normal world, no one would even be looking through the New York Times journalist's tweet history.
Oh, and let me also just say this, that the funny thing and where this doesn't even match up, or we're seeing people members of the liberal media. I hate that I still use liberal and conservative in these ways.
I know.
My stomach turns every time I say it.
I know. And yeah.
But either way, that you can say that, wow, you know, look at the attack on the press by merely going back into what they published to show how they have been wrong and how they have been so dedicated in their pursuit of destruction of a target instead of the reporting on an issue. They've been looking to destroy a target this entire time. And they're being called out by people bringing up stuff that they published. This is not doxing. This is not an attack. This is stuff that they put out willingly to the public to try to shape a public narrative. And to say that the press is being attacked by pulling up what they have published in a supposedly journalistic fashion, comparing to people inside government, staffers inside government itself, or those out there on the ground level who are using all of the means that are available to consumers to go and out people personally, their names, their phone numbers, their addresses, the pictures of their houses on Google Maps, whatever. There is a big difference from digging up what you have published as a journalist and pointing out where you are wrong and where your bias comes from and defining exactly what your objective is. And there's a difference between that and going after somebody personally and just wanting to cause them personal grief and harm. That's just, it's ridiculous that this is even being compared.
Yeah, and the holier-than-thou virtue signaling threads we've been seeing on this stuff, too. It's like, whoa, you people are just crazy at this point. Yeah. Crazy. I had to adjust my microphone here because I'm sitting back a little. Do you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear.
All right. Ilhan Omar. She's in a lot of trouble, Frank.
She is trouble.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. We had a woman come out and file divorce papers saying that her husband has been cheating on her with Ilhan Omar. His name is Tim Minette, and he has been a fundraising consultant for her since 2018. I'm sorry, for her 2018 and 2020 campaigns. She hasn't commented on this yet, but she has spent over $200,000 with his firm. Of the $145,406 in reported earnings by the E Street Group, which is his firm, during the 2018 campaign cycle, $62,674 came from Omar's campaign. He was her second largest vendor. When you're paying your fundraising consultant the second most amount of money that you're paying out, what is he fundraising for you? I don't understand. And the overwhelming amount of funds that she spent were spent after she won the primary and during a non-competitive general in her 26-point district.
Mm.
So here's yet another.
And she's a home wrecker.
Yeah. I mean, people are making the joke. She sure does to like to break up families.
Yeah. Yeah. That wouldn't fly in Somalia.
No.
That wouldn't fly in Somalia there, Omar.
No, it wouldn't. And what's really crazy about this, too, is that this consultant also worked on Keith Ellison's campaign. Do you know, you remember what happened with him?
Oh, yeah. Keith Ellison.
Yeah.
Keith Ellison and the Flying Fists.
And he was accused of that with a woman as well. And you could see this, Omar. What do people see in this woman?
Nothing. Nothing. You have listen, Tracy. The one thing I have learned is that people don't really see virtue in those that they extol in public. They don't really see virtue in those like Ilhan Omar. They see opportunities and they see tools. They see a woman whose roots are in Africa who wears a religiously affiliated headdress. They see an opportunity to do things with her that would be hard to do with somebody who was lighter skinned or a man. They see opportunities of protection because they've created their own class system within the country. They've created the progressive stack. That's what they see. Just like when it comes to the Clintons, nobody actually really cares about Hillary Clinton. They don't care about Bill Clinton. When they are relevant, they are useful. And now that they are of no more use, they don't care if you flush Bill Clinton away. They will actually even go as far as agreeing with you that perhaps Bill Clinton was very, very naughty when it came to the way that he treated people around him. And then when it comes to even people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, nobody care. If she, nobody would be supporting her. They don't want to see her, you know, go off into retirement and rest and recover and live a happy existence for the rest of her life. They want her to merely keep breathing with the black robe on because she is a tool. These people don't have any connections to anyone. Everything is an opportunity.
Yeah, which is why I keep saying, I talked to somebody the other day on the phone. This is a little off topic, but he was a former special agent. Won't give any other details on the call on who it was. But basically said this. There, in his opinion, there's no way that these Spygate crimes, for lack of a better word, go unpunished by this Justice Department. And the reason why this person says that is because, I'll get to why this ties in a second, is because to do that would make it nearly impossible for any prosecutor to get an indictment from a grand jury or otherwise, or even a successful conviction or bring trial against anyone that committed anything even remotely similar to these things ever again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the precedent will be, well, they got away with it. Why should I have to be accountable, right? So it will basically nullify the existing law on the books for these things.
Well, let me just interject there. You can already say, I mean, well, from James Comey's own public announcement on July 5th or 6th in 2016 to exactly what we know what was going on with Hillary Clinton from the way that she was handling classified information and the way that she obstructed the investigation by destroying or attempting to destroy subpoenaed evidence. Right there, anybody who has ever been thrown in jail for merely taking a selfie near a nuclear submarine should be let out of jail.
You know, it's funny because we talked about that very specific example. And then I said, you know, the only reason why Hillary Clinton is not being held to account for that email server or what hasn't been up until now that we know of is because it would take down Barack Obama. Because Barack Obama also emailed with her on the private server.
We know that because of Cheryl Mills.
Because of Cheryl. Yes.
That was the first one. That was the first time we knew that, oh boy. So Barry knew all about this because Cheryl Mills said that this had to be handled.
Yeah. And he Cheryl Mills said, uh-oh, guys, he's lying. We better cover this up and fix it. And I said, the thing is about these people is leverage. If they do, there is literally zero loyalty amongst these people at all. Zero. They do not care to support someone else, to have their back, to stand true next to them. They care about themselves, self-aggrandizement, and making themselves, you know, personal advancement. That's all they care about. And so when information goes public, like through Judicial Watch or any of the other, you know, like FOIA releases or anything, they lose leverage that they once had over someone else. Because as Bruce Orr's 302s come out, well, then Bruce Orr has a little less leverage, or Christopher Steele. You understand what I mean?
Yep.
And as that leverage is eroded, so is their loyalty, hence making them much more susceptible to flip, to spill, to rat, because they know that the other person who might have had something on them is now vulnerable and it's safe, which is why I keep saying it is so freaking important that we keep on exposing this stuff, even if it feels to you like nothing's ever going to happen. And it's all about removing leverage.
I'm with you. Listen, the logic is indisputable. So on that note, I hope that we are not let down.
No.
And I hope that means that in the end, Joe DiGenova has just been somebody that goes out there to throw a smoke bomb in one direction, attention in another direction, throw the spotlights up, the limelight over here. I don't know. Maybe he's just a mover and a shaker.
A couple of months ago, I did a thing about the Comey report. I know the Comey report exists. We've heard about it elsewhere. It's not just him that said it, but he gave a date. Nothing ever happened. And I said he's putting his reputation on the line now. And now I've seen several appearances since that time. And well, I think that he does have a good grasp on what's going on. I watched them on Sebastian Gorka's show. And during that interview, they had less of a grasp on the details of things than I did. And I found that really interesting for people who claim to be on the inside with information like this, right? Which they never say. They never say. So, you know, I have sources inside who told me this. They just say whatever it is they're going to say and move on. And it is quite possible that they have been put there to go out and just throw things around to keep people on their toes. And, you know, the sacrificial lamb and all that is us, because it brings people up, it shoots them down. It brings them up, it shoots them down. Mm. And what he said the other day about there not being prosecutions because you have to keep the institution safe and you can't go after political enemies is complete bullshit. That's not law and order and justice, and that's not something that a U.S. attorney should be saying.
Agreed.
So, yesterday to end, because I you know, it's a little light on topics for today.
I think we did good.
Yeah, I got one more thing, though. Last night, I was kind of in a humdrum mood, and I posted on my page, and I said, tell me something funny, and I got 563 responses, some of which were really good. Some of them were political. Some of them were sarcastic. Some of them were personal stories. One of them was really funny by Kiki. We call my dad Poppy because of the grandkids. On a trip to the Grand Canyon, my mom spontaneously fell forward out of nowhere. As she was going down, she yelled, Poppy, and the Spanish guy that was close by ran to help her. My dad wasn't even paying attention. So she yells out, Poppy! And here comes the Spanish dude.
Hey, there you go.
In Canada, Beyonce is married to Jay-Z.
Jay-Z?
Yeah. Because that's what they
Because that was that French?
Yeah.
Is that how you say Z?
Yeah.
Jay-Z.
I've had my car for 8 years and just now discovered the little button on the turn signal that tells you the percent of oil life you had left. I had no idea there was such a button, Susie Q.
Hey, you know what? I love finding little things in cars years into owning them.
That you had no idea existed?
Yeah, that's why I don't read manuals, because I just want to be surprised along the way.
Easter eggs, life hacks. I like life hacks, like how you're supposed to cut a pineapple. Like little life hacks like that I never knew before.
That never worked for me. I know the pineapple thing you're talking about. That never worked. I think that's bullshit.
I open up like some medication, and you can turn the bottle cap over and put it into the bottle, and it holds like whatever your next dose is, so you remember if you took it or not. Why don't they play poker in Africa? There are too many cheetahs. There are some really good ones here. How many Democrats does it take to screw in a light bulb, Frank?
Oh, I don't know.
1 to break the light bulb, 10 to blame the light bulb being broken on a bad guy and raise money, 10 government employees to file an environmental assessment, 10 to screw it in, and then 1 to break it again.
That's amazing.
There are a bunch of really good ones on here. My favorite joke that I said for today is, 2 peanuts walked into a bar. 1 was assaulted.
Watch out.
There's a lot of them. I'm going to put the thread in the show notes for everybody to check out. And, you know, occasionally we're jipping you 10 minutes, but occasionally we go over 10 minutes. And I don't want to just sit here and talk for the sake of talking.
No, you're right. You have to go. It's like the last step, the last season of Seinfeld. You have to go out when you're on top.
I had something to talk about fentanyl, but I'm so sick of it at this point that I'm not going to say it. I was going to talk about it, but we'll go. And we'll see you on what is today, Wednesday? We'll see you on Friday.
2 days now. 2 days from now, we're going to be at it again.
Yeah, you've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Still slightly overcast, but I think I see sun peeking through Val.
and beans. You guys can hear us on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com.
Later.
This is a cannabis podcast. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
We all know as Americans that the opioid crisis is a big deal. Okay, it has been a big deal for a long time. And it's unfolding in front of us, kind of like cigarettes did way, way back when, kind of like the NFL did with the concussions. Well, this opioid thing is starting to unfold. Purdue Pharma just offered between $10 and $12 billion to settle opioid claims. And I guess there's about 2,000 lawsuits. Now, that makes cigarettes look like child play, okay? They offered $12 billion. That means it's worth $40, okay? So if it they know if it goes to court, they're done. They know that. So that's why they're offering $12 billion, okay? Just think about that for a second. You're offering, how much gosh darn money have you made if you're offering you just got $12 billion hanging out to just offer somebody? So Purdue Pharma, they conceded, we did wrong. They should all go to jail, okay? $12 billion doesn't do anything for all those people that are dead. They should all go to jail.
The Cannabis Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.